This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast.
And here we go, here we go.
Brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com. Broadcasting around the world.
Around the world.
We have the latest on KU recruiting, analysis, and what the coaches and players are saying behind the scenes. Here are your hosts, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers back with another edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. And man, let me tell you, we have a loaded show that is going to be very football heavy. For all our friends in the Memorial Stadium Slant Suite, this one is for you. We've got some great guests, one of the best in the business. Phil Steele will be joining us to talk Kansas football and the current state of the Big 12, as well as the latest Kansas football commitment in Caleb Purdy will be joining us on the line here in a little bit. Before we get into all that, let me bring in my partner and the publisher of Jayhawk Slant, Mr. John Kirby. JK, how are you doing on this beautiful, super hot summer Friday in Kansas City?
I can tell you, Randy, it was beautiful for a while, and I can tell you that it is hot because right before we started the podcast, I was driving home and I got rear-ended by a dude.
Oh man.
So I sat out.
Oh, that sucks.
I sat out there. Hey, listen, it was a mistake. It was an honest deal. The guy even admitted when we found a place to park and got out of the car, and he's like, man, I'm sorry. He goes, I just wasn't paying attention. I mean, this guy was driving probably about a $50,000 Ram pickup truck, and I was like, man, that sucks. And we sat out there for a while, and we were waiting for the cops to come. And I mean, both of us looked at each other and go, man, I'm going back in my car and turning the AC on. man, I'm telling you what, just sitting outside for about 15, 20 minutes waiting for the cops. Finally, me and this guy just went, hey, we'll catch up when the cops get here. We both went in our cars and turned the AC on.
Man, it's still hot. The crazy thing is yesterday was horrible. Yesterday was like that jet engine kind of heat. It was just oppressive. And we're only talking a difference of maybe 5 degrees on the thermometer between yesterday and today. Today, it's still pretty dang hot, obviously. But man, yesterday was one of the worst days in this area that I can remember in quite a while. And I was, I was supposed to actually be heading up to St. Joe this morning to watch Chiefs training camp practice at 9:15. Ended up having to cancel because of a project I had to put together for work. But I still was thinking, I was looking at the thermometer this morning. I was like, man, about 9:15, it was still, it was already, 85, 90 degrees. And I wasn't sure I really wanted to be out in that either. I feel bad for you having to stand around in this kind of heat, especially on the side of the road on the blacktop. I mean,
hey, I'm going to tell you this, Randy. I will promise you, I covered KU's camp for 3 hours on Wednesday. Ooh. And I am here to tell you that indoor was hot, but man, when I went outside, I went down to the field to watch some guys play for about 30 minutes. And I'm telling you, that turf at about 3:30 in the afternoon, I was down there. My feet were on fire.
Were you on the practice fields or were you in the stadium?
Stadium. Yeah, I was in the stadium. And I don't know if people know, if you've never been on turf in the hot, when it gets that hot. The temperature might say 97 real time. Down on that turf, it might be like 115 because it is absolutely scorching.
It is brutal. I don't know, I don't know if you even remember this one. This was several years ago. KU hosted a JUCO camp on a Saturday, and I went down to cover that thing. And most of the drill work happened in the stadium. And I remember standing there at midfield talking with a couple of the assistant coaches, and they probably had 100 junior college players out there on the field, and it was just same kind, just brutal hot. And the coaching staff, their iPads were shutting down. It was so hot. Like, they were having trouble. They couldn't log any of the data. The video team was having trouble. I mean, I think I saw like one of the trainers checked, and it was like you say, it was like 1:15 at midfield. It was horrible. And that turf, the way it just reflects that heat right back up to you, even on a day when you're out there and it may not seem like it, you know, it might be a cloudy day, you get sunburnt like no other because of the reflection coming back up off that fake grass.
Hey, when the iPads start shutting down, that's maybe when you just tell everybody, all right, time to go home, boys.
Exactly. This was back when Dirk Wed was the director of high school football relations. I turned to him. I just kind of looked. I was like, really, coach? And he was like, hey, you have fun, Randy. I'm going to head on home.
Yeah. Hey, Dirk wasn't stupid.
No, Dirk knew. He was just like, yeah, I'm going to move it along. Time to move it along. Speaking of time to move it along, man, I just wonder who else is going to be moving along and where things could be moving. You know, I feel like we have to start with realignment. I mean, there's a ton of other stuff going on. I mean, camp starts here in a couple weeks. KU just had a huge high school camp this week that you were mentioning you were down there for. But we have to start with the elephant in the room. You know, and speaking of elephant in the room, I've got to give you some credit here. You reported early Wednesday morning that the AAC was going to be aggressive and go after Big 12 schools. And by the evening, it was being reported that that is exactly what's going on, man. You were all over that, JK.
Yeah, Randy, I get lucky once in a while. But No, actually, I did. I had talked to a couple people who definitely are connected. They know what they're doing. A
couple people.
Well, couple. Just a couple. But they told me that Oresco, who is the commissioner of the AAC, very forward-thinking guy, very sharp, very intelligent guy. He's an old TV guy before he got into being.
I was about to say he was an old network guy.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, he's got the connections. He knows what to do, and give him a little credit. I mean, if that's what they're doing, you know, they're trying to keep the AAC together and then form with some Big 12 teams, because you know what the other alternative is, Randy, that we don't know how this is all going to play out, but the other would be the Big 12 go take his four teams, right? So if that were to happen, then he may be looking at a conference that's nothing like he's looking at now. So, but yeah, I was just told that could happen. And I don't know, you know, I don't know how realistic all that is. There are some people out there that really believe, you know, it would be in some of those schools' better interest to look at that. I don't see that. I mean, I guess if it was a last ditch effort and something came down that you might look at that. I just don't see that for schools who have, you know, options if this thing goes. And Randy, this is what this all comes down to. And I've said this on the message board several times. It comes down to when and if conferences are going to expand, okay? Mm-hmm. Does the SEC play, does this do the domino effect, the snowball effect going downhill, and then the Big Ten go, hold on, we don't want to get left out in the cold here. We need to go look at two, okay? I've talked to some people who said that when this first came out, that the Big Ten probably wasn't doing cartwheels on looking at expansion. They feel that everything they're doing is in pretty good shape. Their member schools are bringing in some cash. The conference is healthy, okay? But if the ACC comes out and goes, you know what, we're interested, and if the Pac-12 comes out and says we're interested, then it becomes a little bit of a rat race, okay? Because you don't want to start getting your tier B and tier C schools. And I'm just using the Big Ten as an example. Okay. I mean, it's a very prestigious conference. It's very well run. The members are all strong in there.
Of course.
You know, Kansas is a school that fits in the Big Ten mold. Okay. I mean, when I say that, I'm talking especially of the schools who would be available to go. Kansas would be at the top of the list. So at some point, if the expansion starts, the Big Ten isn't going to want to sit back and say, okay, God dog, we just lost Kansas. Oh, man, Iowa State just went to the ACC. And I'm just throwing that out as an example. And then the Big Ten sits here and goes, well, God, those were two schools of everybody available we would have liked to have had. So it's going to come down to what triggers it. And I'll tell you what else is going to be interesting. And I posted this on the message board this afternoon. Brett McMurphy tweeted out. I think Nicole Auerbach did. I mean, there's some talk, some NCAA meetings that could start here in November and then really carry into January. And I mean, Randy, the decentralization of the NCAA or limiting what maybe, you know, powers they have, this is starting to become really in play. And I think some of that probably triggered with the whole NIL stuff. You know, they lost some control there with players being able to, you know, take advantage of their name, image, and likeness. So we are moving into, we're talking about realignment. I'm talking about what will the NCAA look like in January or February, because we don't know. So, I mean, this thing has still, there is a lot of twists and turns that's going to happen in this. But the one thing I will say, and I've told Kansas fans and friends that have called me, if the conferences, if this turns into a deal where everybody starts to looking to expand, Kansas is going to be absolutely okay. They will. Now, what you worry about is if the other conferences say, hey, we're good. Hey, SEC, hey, congrats, you got Oklahoma and Texas, but we're good. Then that changes the game. But if this thing turns into something where everybody is out racing to get somebody, the Jayhawks will be just fine.
With that in mind, I mean, this is, gosh, I don't even know where to begin with this, John. I mean, it's one of those things where as a fan base, you know, I look on Twitter and I look on our message boards, and I know there are a lot of KU fans that are really worried. However, you know, listening to sports talk radio, it seems like KU fans need to remember they are in good shape. Whereas I heard somebody talking, you know, on the radio today, talking directly to K-State fans saying, that's the fan base that's really got a lot to worry about, because they don't have that big name program, that marquee name like Kansas men's basketball to sell. They don't have necessarily the number of facilities and the different sports that KU has built over the last several years. I mean, when you say that KU fans are, that KU is going to be a name that's in demand, I mean, is that based on the conversations that you had? Is that an opinion? I mean, give people something that they can hold on to that are getting kind of maybe a little bit hopeless right now, John.
Yeah, no. I don't know if a lot of KU fans are hopeless. I think they're just nervous of the timing of this, right?
Okay,
I mean,
poor choice of words. You're right.
Yeah, yes, so.
There are a lot of nervous KU fans.
Well, Randy, when you talk about, and you know, timing, that's something else we didn't talk about, is, you know, OU and Texas, you know, when do they leave? I mean, do they try to get out of the Big 12 after this year? Because, boy, you talk about putting guys under pressure. I mean, you've got to get your football schedule set. I mean,
you think that's what's going to happen here, though?
I don't know. I don't know right now. Obviously, the Big 12's posturing pretty hard for the 2025 thing, which we know that's not going to happen. It's not going to be 2025. But, no. Hey, Randy, I want to go back to what you asked me about Kansas, and you said, why Kansas and why are they in position?
Well, yeah.
Well, number one, they're the flagship school of the state. Okay, number two, they're an AAU member. They're known for academics. And this is what people need to understand. The conferences, when they go to realignment and everything, it's not athletic directors who are making the call. It's not the commissioner of the conference who's making the call. It is the school presidents, okay? And what does almost every single school president have? They're academic people, okay? Sure, they might like their sports, but they are academic people. And that's the one thing Kansas has going for it. When you look at the pool of schools who would be available, Kansas and that AAU status and what they bring to the table academically is going to be attractive to conference commissioners chancellors and presidents of schools. And that's going to be one thing. And obviously, you know, the Jayhawks are a national name. Obviously, the basketball program. And people can talk about that. But I'm telling you, the academics and what they would bring there is what's going to really get some of those people sitting in that high chair.
That's exactly what Jayhawk Nation wants to hear right now. And that's, you know, like we say, we're going to start with realignment. Now that we've talked about that, let's get into some actual Kansas football talk, not just things that are heavily dependent on Kansas football talk. Even though realignment is obviously, that's the biggest, arguably maybe the biggest sports story in America right now. Summer camps, before we get into KU, you know, summer camps and recruiting and everything, we have got a big name guest about to join us. Kirby, you had a chance to talk with the preeminent name when it comes to preseason guides. In fact, I was trying to pick mine up today. I'm going to the bookstore to pick it up tomorrow. You had a chance to talk to Phil Steele. Let's hear from the man in charge right now.
We are now joined by one of the best in the business and a fan favorite of Jayhawk Slant, Phil Steele. Phil, how you doing, man?
I am doing great, John. We are playing football this year. There are no questions. I don't think we're going to have any schedule changes. I'm as excited as you can be.
Well, hey, it is a stark difference compared to what you and I were talking to at this time last year. And, you know, Phil, when I reached out to you and wanted to schedule this, you know, I wanted to talk KU football, right? But obviously, in the last week, we've seen a lot of changes come down. And, I wanted to start off, and we'll get to some football, but just what is your thought on realignment, Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, and what do you make of all this?
Well, I'll tell you, John, I'm a traditionalist, so I can take you back to when the Southwest Conference disbanded and the Big 12 emerged. I didn't like it then. I didn't like it when Nebraska stopped playing Oklahoma or Arkansas stopped playing Texas and, you know, some teams move into the SEC. But, I mean, it's where we're headed. I'm not sure where we're going to end up. I've always thought 4 16-team super conferences. Maybe we're headed there. I'm not sure, but it's definitely been a very eventful couple of days.
Yeah, you know, and so I do want to shift over to some football. I think I saw on social media you had a chance to talk to Lance Leipold. Now, I'm just curious, you know, what's your take on the hire and thoughts on him running the Kansas program?
You know, I love the hire. Lance Leipold did a tremendous job in FCS and then went to Buffalo. And Buffalo is far from a powerhouse when he took over. They took their lumps early in his career there. And down the stretch, they've just been absolutely dominant. They've done it with a power running game. They've done it with defense, special teams, all the things you like to see. And, you know, he's not coming in and flash and dance and, you know, oh, I'm going to do this and that. He's just going to come in with that work ethic and get them going. And I like the fact that he kept the interim head coach, Emmett Jones, because Emmett Jones was basically the guy that knows the program inside and out, took him through spring practice. In fact, when I talked to Coach Leipold, I was also talking to Coach Jones at the same time to get the two different outlooks on the players because, of course, Coach Leipold didn't take over till after spring practice was over. He was at the spring game, but that was about it for Coach Leipold. So it's a unique blend. I don't think expectations are very high for Kansas this year. In fact, during the call, Coach Leipold said, why don't you send over some of your stats you have about Kansas's, you know, what they've been doing, because he feels that they're going to pull a couple upsets somewhere along the line possibly this year and have a better season than expected.
Well, as we get into 2021, you know, just give me your take on what you see in Kansas heading into the season.
Well, I'll tell you, John, and as we talked off air, I congratulate you on following Kansas football for 22 years because it's sort of like banging your head into a wall, I would imagine. But, you know, overall, I like the way that Les Miles was building the team with freshmen and not going the JUCO and the transfer route. And I think the benefactor of that is going to be Coach Leipold coming up. They've got 8 starters back on offense, 8 on defense. They do bring in a couple of transfers this year, especially some Buffalo transfers who Coach Leipold's very comfortable with, like a Mike Nowitzki at center and Eddie Wilson at nose guard. I think if you look at the overall talent, I mean, there is a spattering of talent throughout the team, but the Big 12 overall has probably got 9 bowl-caliber teams this year, and I wouldn't put Kansas in that category right now. Probably the top player, maybe a Kenny Logan at the safety. You have to look up front. On the defensive line, we got a couple of key players. And overall, it's a Kansas team that's going to be more competitive, I feel, than what they've been in recent years. But they're still going to be an underdog in probably 11 of their 12 games this year. So they're going to need to pull an upset or two to move much higher than that.
You know, when you talk about being an underdog, you know, you always look at the non-con and try to think, okay, who can you beat that's not in the conference? So, you know, there's a couple key games, Coastal Carolina and Duke. How do you see those two teams?
Coastal's going to be tough. First of all, they're at home, so they're going to be fired up for that one, unbelievably, because they really don't host Power 5 teams. As we've seen when Kansas played Coastal the last 2 years, I think 2 years ago, it was a close game, could have gone either way. Last year, Coastal pretty much had their way with Kansas. Now they get them at home. And like most teams in college football this year, John, Coastal's got practically everybody back from last year's squad. They've got like 19, 20 returning starters coming back, and they're going to be all fired up for that one. Now, the Duke game, Duke last year didn't have a lot of things go in their favor. They had a lot of turnovers. They were minus 19 in turnovers. And Coach Cutcliffe is a guy that develops players. He needs time with the players, get them going. He didn't have that last spring. He's got that this year. They've got more continuity than Kansas does. Coach Cutcliffe's been there forever. This is 13th year at Duke. Very familiar with all the players. Meanwhile, Kansas has a brand new coaching staff. But I think Kansas does have more of a shot at actually the Duke game than Coastal Carolina, just because I think Coastal was playing its best ball down the stretch last year and almost everybody's back.
You know, Phil, just kind of wrapping this up, you know, what's your thoughts on the conference, the Big 12? You know, who do you like? Is there a surprise team in there? And how do you see the conference shaping up?
Yeah, it's part of the reason that maybe down a little on Kansas chances this year is that I feel there's nine bowl caliber teams. I mean, you take a look at Baylor. Baylor's a team that Dave Aranda was a first-year head coach last year. Didn't really know the players, didn't have the benefit of spring, and they took their lumps last year. They were also an inexperienced squad last year, only two returning starters on defense. This year they have 10. They'll be much better. Kansas State lost their starting quarterback early last year in Skylar Thompson. They had opened up 4-1 and were ranked number 16 in the country. Then without their quarterback, they sort of fell apart down the stretch. They've got 16 returning starters coming back. Matt Wells is in his third year. I feel that new head coaches generally hit their stride in year three, and I expect that from Matt Wells this year. He's got eight starters back on both sides of the ball. I think they do have a shot at getting to a bowl game. West Virginia is a team that, with Neil Brown, he's in his third year. They've got 17 returning starters coming back. They have a chance of moving into the upper half of the Big 12 this year. Oklahoma State, never discount Mike Gundy. He does lose his top wide receiver, top two receivers, and top running back, but he's got plenty of talent there throughout and could surprise. TCU has got the defense under Gary Patterson. I think when you look at them offensively, Max Duggan, the QB spot, Zach Evans, who was the number one running back out of high school last year, I think really emerges this year. He's one of those breakout players. TCU would probably be my surprise team in the Big 12 because no one's talking about them. They have 18 returning starters and could be a surprise contender at the end of the year. And then there's the Big Three. Texas, when I talked to Coach Sarkisian, went over the team with him. He's actually happy with the talent he inherited there at Texas. Pointed out to me something I had mentioned last year is that Texas was three plays away from being 10-0 last year. They had a fumble at the goal line against TCU. They had the four overtime game against Oklahoma. Led Iowa State start to finish. Iowa State didn't take their first lead till about 2 minutes left. And like I said, he likes the talent he inherited. He feels they'll be a contender in the Big 12. And then the Big Two that everybody's looking at this year. Two top 10 teams. Iowa State, an inexperienced offensive line last year, now has an experienced offensive line. In fact, Coach Campbell feels it may be the best offensive line he's had here. You pair that with Brock Purdy, a quarterback. Breece Hall, one of the top running backs in the country. One of the top tight end rooms in the country with Chase Allen and Charlie Kolar, a dangerous receiver like Xavier Hutchinson, and a top-notch defense. I think they're a legitimate national title contender if they can get past Oklahoma. And then, yeah, really went out on a limb with this. I picked Oklahoma to win the Big 12, but I also picked them to win the national title this year for two reasons. They're going to have their normal potent offense under Lincoln Riley whenever he's had an experienced quarterback. They've had that offense. He's had two Heisman winners and a Heisman finalist with an experienced QB. He's got that experienced QB this year. Spencer Rattler, my number one rated offensive line, number two set of receivers, and number four set of running backs. Best offense in the country. Now, when Oklahoma's made the playoff the last three times, they've given up 54, 45, and 63 points. But last year, Oklahoma actually allowed less yards per game than Alabama did on defense. They only gave up 21 points per game. They got eight starters back. They got my number three D-line, number nine set of linebackers, number three DBs. I rate them the number five defense in the country. So take the number one offense, pair it with the number five defense, 15 returning starters, and a veteran quarterback. They're my pick to win the Big 12 and win it all this year. And keep in mind, the four teams that made the playoff last year all have just 9, 10, 11 returning starters and all lose their starting quarterbacks.
I'll tell you what, Phil, after listening to you break down the Big 12, I've looked at it on paper, but then when I hear it from your voice, it definitely does start to feel like a little bit of an uphill climb for the Jayhawks, you know, in year one under Leipold. But, you know, I guess we'll see how that turns out. So, listen, folks, you've been listening to Phil Steele. He is one of the nation's top authorities on college football, and he's always talked about on our website, and it's always great to have him. And, Phil, I want to thank you for joining us.
John, I don't get the pleasure of talking Kansas football that much during the course of a season, so I appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun talking KU football with you today.
All right, Phil. Thank you very much, man. Take care.
All right. Thanks, John.
Kirby, that was as impressive an interview as I think people are ever going to hear on this podcast. I mean, there just isn't much that Phil Steele doesn't know.
Man, Phil Steele is one of my favorites. The guy, he knows everything about every team. And I mean, he knows the starting tight end from Coastal Carolina, right? I mean, he knows the backup strong safety at Duke. I mean, that's what I love about Phil Steele. I mean, he's not a guy that just scratches the surface. He really gets in behind it. You know, it's like you said, he talked to Leipold, Emmett Jones. I mean, he does his homework, and man, if there's a guy that I follow, it's him.
Oh, no question. No question. I mean, year in, year out, he puts in the most work. It is the most comprehensive guide to college football. Phil Steele's College Football. You know, I don't plug books very often on the podcast, but hey, if you're looking for something to get you through the next several weeks until games kick off, that is what you need right there. Now, we mentioned games and everything starting up. We are finally near the end of our long national nightmare. Fall camp starts next week, Kirby. I want to give you the floor, and I want you to tell me and tell all of our listeners what things you're looking forward to, and you know whether that's a certain player or maybe competition at a position group. Tell us what we need to be looking forward to, because I know people are excited. I mean, this is the first time that this brand new coaching staff, led by a man who is widely respected as one of the best college football coaches in the country, it's the first time they're going to get a chance to be on the field with these players.
Yeah, isn't that crazy, Randy? I mean,
nuts.
Just the timing of how this is going, that, you know, here we go, August, you know, Leipold and his staff is going to get their first look at the guys. You know, I'll start on defense. Kenny Logan and Ricky Thomas, I'll start with the safeties. You know, those guys
are a great place to start right there.
Hey, those guys are leaders. They've been in the program. You know, they're probably going to help call a lot of things on the back end there. They can be leaders to OJ Burrows and Jason Gilliam. So, you know, that safety spot, you know, Randy, you can probably look at every position that Kansas has and probably pick some holes in it. But, you know, safety's got some guys there who've played, and they've got some young kids who are coming up. Then you move over to cornerback. You know, you got Deuce Mayberry, Jacoby Bryant. I did confirm Jeremy Webb is scheduled to be in this weekend. So, you know, there's a 6'4" corner that transferring from Missouri State who came from Virginia Tech. He'll help out.
Man, that's a big defensive back.
Woo. Oh, he is a big guy, too. And I mean, you know, Kansas has recruited some big guys. You know, look at some of the young guys, Dabney and Dotson and Devontae Wilson. So, you know, Devontae Wilson's no small guy, but Jeremy Webb is 6'4". I mean, he looks like a tight end out there playing safety. So, you know, that back end, I think there's some ability there. You can't have any injuries. You know, you're worried a little bit about the depth and some of the inexperience on the back end. When you move over to linebackers, you know, that's probably not as clear cut, okay, as you can go find a couple guys right now and say, hey, there's my starting corners. You definitely can look at the guys and say, there's my starting safeties. But when you look at the linebackers, you know, I don't know if it's quite as clear cut as who those guys would be. Tywan Berryhill was showing some things last year. I know the coaches were high on him last year. You know, Gavin Potter's played a lot of snaps. Deneen and Nick Channel are in there. You've got Richard Miller, who's a transfer from Buffalo. He'll help out. You know, he's familiar with the system. I've heard a lot of good things about him, just his personality and his leadership. And he's come in and kind of helped some guys on defense. You know, let them know that this is what the coaching staff likes. This is what they're used to. This is how they do things. Cornell Wheeler, who came in from Michigan, a transfer, saw him up at the camp there today. But he's a good-looking kid now. I mean, you know, he's built pretty well, so he was a force.
He's one I can't wait to see him in action. Yeah. I'm really excited about his potential.
Yeah, I mean, he looked, you know, some of the players were hanging out there, Randy. And you know, it's funny mm-hmm. when you walk around and you just eyeball guys, you kind of go, "Who's that? Who's that?" And like when you saw Cornell Wheel, I mean, you know, he looks like a D1 type inside linebacker type guy. I mean, he's, you know, he's built, and you know how you've been around it, how you can just look at a guy and go, "Hey, that guy looks like an inside linebacker who plays some football."
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You look around and you're like, that's a dude. That's what they look like right there.
Yeah, and then, you know, Nate Betts, he's moving mm-hmm. from safety to linebacker. I think that's going to help out a lot because I think he's a really good football player. I do. I think he's gone unnoticed. Put a little bit of weight on him. He'll give you some experience in there, give you a little speed. Krishan Brown's another guy. He's got some talent. So, you know, the linebackers, there's some candidates in there. We're just going to have to see what fall camp brings and see what Chris Simpson likes, the linebacker coach, and you know, go from there. But that's one of those where I think there's some question marks, maybe more than any other position. And then we go from there to the defensive line. And the defensive line is going to be one that I'm very interested in because you're going to a 4-3. So now you're going back to the two traditional DNs, okay? You are going to the two interior guys. So, you know, that brings some question marks in because Kansas has recruited to be a 3-4 where you're looking for a little bit bigger body guys, play some 3-tech, 5-tech, and maybe not as much of the rush in. And, you know, Randy, I got to thinking about this. I don't remember the last time Kansas was in a true 4-3. It might have been... Bill Young was in the 4-3, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then Bowen was in it, and then I think they might have transitioned to a 3-man front. Torbush was 3-man front. Weiss
God, there's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, Cole, yeah, and then Sheely stayed in the 3-man front, and then Weiss was 3-man front. Beatty was 3-man front. Miles was 3-man front. So, I mean, and I'm just thinking of this just as we're doing this. I haven't really thought back that far, but... it's been a long time since we've seen Kansas line up in a true base 4-3. So, you know, one of the questions is defensive line, defensive end. There's bodies. There is some talent there. I actually feel good what they can do. Now, we've got to find out who can step up and be that DN. Who's going to rush the quarterback? Stephen Parker is a guy that I think that fits the mold, okay? He's a hand in the ground, get after the quarterback. That's what he was coming out mm-hmm. of high school. Kyron Johnson has the speed to come off the edge. Zion DeBose, who's a transfer from Virginia Tech, I still want to see him. I still want to see how he looks, and you know, I don't know which film to believe because I'm telling you, in his high school film, that guy, he got after it. I mean, he came out, shot out like a cannon. You know, then Damarian Alexander, the new kid, kind of a hybrid linebacker, defensive end. I don't know how much.
He seems so perfect for this kind of a system.
Yeah.
He's one of the names, one of the guys I'm really intrigued by.
Yeah, Randy, you know, he's going to have, you know, definitely have to put on some weight, okay? I heard some things this week that the strength and conditioning program has already shown some major gains. And, you know, I hope we get Gildersleeve during fall camp because I think he can probably shed some light on that. But I heard some things this week that, you know, they've got some facts to prove it. Just the changes of the body and some of the things that they've had some pretty good success there. And then, you know, moving down to defensive tackle, golly, I mean, there's some candidates here now. A defensive tackle, Eddie Wilson came in from Buffalo. He's a big body. McGee came in from Buffalo. He's another one. Caleb Taylor will probably move inside. Jeremy Robinson, Keenan Caldwell.
Keenan Caldwell is a guy that that's one that I really believe is going to develop.
Yeah, he's got all the talent. I mean, I heard coming out last year that he's a guy that could push Burt and when Dejon Terry was there, I was hearing that he could be a guy to start. Sam Burt's
that's
another
exactly
one.
What I heard too. And I just remember thinking, I was like, really? And when Dejon, obviously, I mean, that was a big loss, him and Harris, for this defensive line group. But I remember thinking, I was like, you know, if the Caldwell kid is what they say he is, we may be just fine.
Well, one of the things you got to know, too, Randy, is, you know, Caldwell, he does move well. But he was also recruited to be a nose type, you know, in the 3-4 lineup over the ball. So these guys, if they're going to do the 4-3 and the... You know, Borland talked in his press conference that the whole 4-3 thing, yeah, we're going to play 4-3, he said, but sometimes you might look down there and think it's a 3-4, okay? So they're going to move him around. It'll be interesting to see how the true D tackle or D lineman shades up over a guard, or how they shade and line up, and they'll move around. And, you know, I almost forgot, but Malcolm Lee, Caleb Sampson, and Sam Burt. I mean, those guys are three guys.
Old man Sam Burt.
Hey, man, those guys are, you need guys who have been through the Big 12. They've played their snaps. They understand what it takes. I mean, if you've never played, hey, Tommy Dunn. Tommy Dunn's another guy. He's 6'3", 290. The kid's athletic.
And he's a big man.
But the difference is, hold on, he has never lined up across from a Big 12 guard and a Big 12 center, okay? Sam Burt has, okay? Caleb Sampson has. Malcolm Lee has. And until you do it, you don't know what you're getting into. So, you know, listen, on the defensive line, I think there are some bodies. The defensive end is a little bit of a question mark, but I think the defensive interior guys, there are enough players in there that I think they're going to be pretty good. I really think they'll develop into something. And I think we hit on every position there. Yeah, so
one of the first things that you mentioned is the only thing that I'm concerned about, and that's the possibility an injury could have a huge impact on this defense, just because of there are depth in spots, but the thing is you're so inexperienced, and like you said, you've got a lot of guys with the potential to play that have either never played college football before or have never played here before and are getting used to new teammates and new systems. An injury could be just a huge blow to this defense, but I agree. I think the potential is there that especially, you know, by the midway point of the season, we might really start to see something from them.
Well, Randy, it depends where the injury is. Okay. So if you lose Deuce Mayberry or Jacoby Bryant, okay, now you're crying in your beer. I mean, you're going, wow, you know, you're going to have to get a young guy ready. You're going to have to get a transfer ready. If you lose Kenny Logan, okay, you're like crying in a keg of beer. Okay. So, I mean, you're just, you can't lose. You see what I'm saying?
Can't tell it's Friday with Kirby talking about beer this much.
Well, hey, I might need one after getting rear-ended this afternoon.
Well, yeah, you spent half the day standing on the side of the road waiting for the cops to come, so.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, now on the defensive line, okay, go look at the depth of some of the interior guys. You lose a guy there, you can plug and play. You've got some guys to, you know, so. You know, moving over the offense, hey, you know, I just sat here and said I like what I see on the defensive line. When you go to the offensive line, I've got some guarded optimism. For the first time in a long time, I'm convincing myself to feel good about the offensive line. I really think it's been upgraded, okay? I think, listen, just go down a center, okay? You got Mike Nowitzki and Grunhardt that have transferred in. I think that is an upgrade over what Kansas has, and I'm not saying that to knock anybody, but those are, you know, those guys can give you quality snaps. Nowitzki is really good. Grunhardt has been playing in a program and learning from some of the best O linemen in the country. He's found his way onto the field. You know, those are guys. They're older. They're mature. They're going to help you out at tackle. You know, I'll tell you, over the last couple of weeks, I've just heard some whispers. I think they like Bostic. I just early on from workouts and things like that. Obviously, there's no pads. There's no hitting. The coaches can't be around that. But I think there's a good feel about Earl Bostic. You got Mike Ford, who came in from Buffalo. He was going to be, I believe he was the starting right tackle. He had won that job as a redshirt freshman. Cable Dew played some last year. He got snaps. He figured out what it was like to play in the Big 12. And Nick Williams. Nick Williams is a guy with some talent. If he's healthy, he can help you out. He's just got to get healthy. And then you look at guard. There are guys who've played football there that at times have shown they can grade out well. Malik Clark. You know, Malik Clark's not a left tackle. We found that out last year. But he is a left guard. And Chris Hughes. And Joey Gilbertson, I heard Joey Gilbertson had a really good spring. Armaj Adams-Reed is he's a man-child. Adagio Lopetti was playing center, and I wonder if they move him to guard. You know, he's a guy that had, he could have had some options to leave and transfer, and he stayed there at KU. So, you know, when you look at the center, the guard, the tackle, and then you take Scott Fuchs, who I'm a big believer in him. I know me and you have talked. You know how I feel about him.
Oh, yeah, I think I'm right there with you.
I think he can coach, and I have watched him coach at camp. I mean, it is fun. Man, that guy stays in so control. Now, again, I haven't watched him in a real practice yet and watch a center put a couple balls on the ground. He may come unglued, okay? But so far from what I've seen, he's just a real calm. He's a teacher. He's a developer. You know, he doesn't get too high and too low. It's been I've really focused on him at the football camps, working with the guys there, and he does a great job. So, you know, that offensive line I think can be pretty good. Wide receiver, again, wide receiver is like the defensive line. Okay, there's bodies there. There are kids who have proven they can make plays. I don't know if anyone's proven they can be the man, like a Big 12 legit go-to guy. That doesn't mean any of them can't. But, you know, Trevor Wilson came in from Buffalo. He's got big-time speed. He'll be one of the fastest guys on the team. Stephen McBride had a great spring. He'll be one of the top guys. Luke Grimm's back, and Kwame Lassiter, you know, kind of mixing in the tight ends with the Mason Fairchild and Will Huggins. Those guys will help. And then you start watching. You start watching for the guys to make a move that have talent. Lawrence Arnold started a game last year, played in his first four as a true freshman. Then he got hurt. He's back. Tristan Golightly is another 6'3", 6'4", big target kid, highly recruited out of high school. He could come on. I'll tell you somebody that really, Emmett Jones called him out when last time I had a chance to meet with him, and that was Jamal Horn. I mean, when we talk about Trevor Wilson being one of the fastest guys on the team, Jamal Horn can flat out run with him, okay? And Emmett Jones praised Jamal Horn for some of the things that he did. And then a freshman, Keelan Robinson, heard a lot of good things about him, that he's had a real good summer and has impressed some of the players in workouts. So, you know, wide receiver, again, I don't know that there's a guy that you sit here and say, he's your guy to go get the ball, right? I mean, listen, a couple years ago, you had Parchment and Stephon Robinson, and those guys were good. I mean, there were times you knew on third and five, one of those guys could get open. Well, I think Kansas is still looking for that go-to guy that says, hey, this is where I'm going with the ball, and this is a guy that's going to be open. So, you know, running back's going to be interesting to me, Randy, because I don't know what they're looking for. What I do know is, and I've been told this, Buffalo had some damn good running backs. Okay.
Yes, they did.
They had some good running backs. So I don't know what the staff's going to look for. Daniel Hyshaw, heard he's had a great summer. I mean, he is a big, strong guy. You know, and I don't want to say he's one-dimensional, but Daniel Hyshaw's strength is running you over. He is a power guy who, you know,
North,
he's
South
not
back.
Yeah, and he's not a stiff. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they always call, you always hear guys say they're one-cut backs, and that's what they all call bigger backs who don't make a lot more than, you know, you don't see him
one
cutting.
Cut.
Right, one cut, exactly. Although every now and then you'll see those big guys make a couple cuts. But I think
McAnderson could make some
cuts.
You know?
Brandon McAnderson was a one-cut back. So sometimes I always wondered if Jake Sharp was a one cut back. The problem was he was so dang fast that his one cut was in a different level.
Exactly. When you're that kind of fast, you only need one.
Yeah. So, you know, Amari Pesek Hickson is like Hyshaw. They're big bodied, strong guys. I saw Pesek Hickson up at the camp the other day. He looked good physically.
That's a guy that I think people are kind of sleeping on a little bit, Kirby, because he's a guy that was, up until basically heading into his senior year of high school at Blue Valley North, he was primarily a basketball player. And that was when he really started to shift his focus to football. He's just finally gotten his body to real football standards. And everybody talked about it, you know, how rocked up he was at the end of the spring and heading into the summer. That's a kid there that I think specifically in this system and what Leipold and his staff, what they've run in the past, what we expect him to do. I think Pesek Hickson is a kid that could do really great things in that offense.
Yeah, he looked good. You know, so those guys, I kind of categorize categorize those guys as your bigger back, right? And then you got Belton Gardner. He's more your slasher speed guy. And then Devin Neal. I think Devin Neal is going to be more of your multi-purpose back. Devin Neal can run with power. He can run with speed. And there were times I saw Devin Neal on film make some great catches out of the backfield.
He's got very good hands.
Yeah, he is an all-around back. And then one of my guys, and I think we talked about this on the message board, maybe when I did my running back preview, Malik Johnson. Keep your eye on Malik Johnson because he moved from wide receiver to running back. And I'm telling you, he is shifty. He is tremendous in the open field. I did not know they were moving him to running back. But I'll tell you, if Kotelnicki, as the offensive coordinator, is going to be conservative creative, and what I mean by that is jet sweeps, little short passes that are low risk, get a guy out in the open field and see if he can make somebody miss, Malik Johnson becomes a pretty interesting guy to watch because when it comes to being somebody in the backfield and being shifty and making people miss, Malik Johnson would be right up there at the top. That brings us to quarterback, right? Did I cover? Yeah, I kind of talked about the tight end.
You have literally danced around this as long as you can, John.
No, I don't. Listen, I don't have any problem talking about quarterbacks, Randy. And when I say this, when people ask me, hey, what do you think about quarterback? My answer is I don't know about quarterback because the coaches don't know about quarterback, okay? Zabrowski's the quarterback coach. He's never watched one guy. Kotelnicki's the offensive coordinator. He's never watched one of these guys.
It's still so crazy just to say that at this point, but that's Leipold, the world we're living in.
Leipold's the head coach. He's not seen any of these guys. A week from now, these coaches are going to get their first glimpse of these kids playing football, and they're not even going to be padded up for the first few practices. So to me, Randy, the quarterback is just an absolutely wide open deal, okay? I mean, you know, you've got Kendrick and Jalen Daniels back. They took the, you know, majority of snaps last year. You got Jason Bean, who's come in from North Texas, who is probably the best athlete. And, I mean, I don't know if I want to use the term the most electric, but he would probably be the most electric of someone who can make something happen of that group. Because, I mean, he is a legit track guy. I mean, he is a upper 10-4, 10-5 guy in high school, so he can really run. You know, you got the young guys, Holly and Easters. I think they're going to be guys who develop into the program. And I think it'll come down to the Kendrick, Daniels, Bean. And it's going to depend on what they want to do. Hey, maybe Kotelnicki says, you know what? We're going to be ball control. We're going to huddle up. We are going to pound this rock. This is going to be a year where we develop a mentality. Our offensive linemen are going to fire off the ball. They're going to hit somebody. We are going to use this year one to develop an identity of running the football. We're going to try to get creative. Like I said, high percentage creative, where you're doing quarterback runs, jet sweeps. You're throwing little hooks out to the running backs in the flat. Something that's not risky, to where you're turning the ball over and you're sending your defense back out on the field. I think that's what you're going to see from Kansas this year, is a high percentage. Well, when you start looking at that type of thing, and if you want to, you know, a quarterback who can get you out of some trouble or do some design runs, hey, Jason Bean now. I mean, when it comes down to that, he would have an edge in some of that higher percentage football if you're not going to put the ball in the air a lot. So we still don't know what they're going to do, okay, which is going to make fall camp fun. And it's going to make the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season fun just to see what they're trying to develop offensively. Hey, might as well touch on special teams.
Yes, let's talk about the kicking game.
Yeah, and I think special teams, when we talk about, you know, position battles and guys that are in, you know, who's going to win this? Special teams is probably the one that you feel most comfortable about, that you know who your starters are going to be, or at least your leaders going into fall camp. I mean, Borchillo will be the guy at kicker. Vernon's your punter. Hosford is definitely your snapper. And I know talking to Schoonover, you know, back when we had a chance to talk with him, he really likes that Tabor Allen kicking the ball off. He's got a strong leg, gets it, you know, has some nice elevation. So on special teams, you know, those are the guys right there that I think are definitely the leaders in going into the clubhouse as fall camp starts. And, hey, Randy, this is what happens when you tell me I have the floor.
You, that was, That was like a full football filibuster right there with some alliteration, you know, just had to hit that one. I mean,
yeah,
that
and was... listen, I do want to apologize if I forgot a name of somebody in there. I mean, no offense to anything. So if I,
you know,
if
what
I,
it is Phil having Phil Steele around through kind of threw down the gauntlet and you said, well, you know what? I can do that. I can match him name for name. I can go through this roster.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, on a Kansas level, I might be able to. Once you start getting outside of Kansas, I want none of Phil Steele.
Now that we've talked about, you know, we've gone through the roster, we've really prepped people for the start of fall camp, which is finally just about here. You know, let's talk a little bit about the man who's going to be leading this program, who's getting ready for his first fall camp since coming from Buffalo. Lance Leipold, this is a guy who hasn't really even started the job in Lawrence because he's yet to see a single one of these guys take an actual snap. You talked about it. This staff, a lot of these guys are going to be seeing these guys not just in pads for the first time, but running on a field for the first time. What is your 3 months since he arrived in Lawrence, Kansas evaluation on Lance Leipold? Because he was, as you said on Sports Radio 810 this week, he was literally the first name you mentioned when this job looked like it could open up. When it did open up, he was always the guy you felt like was best suited for this. Has anything changed your mind about that impression that you've had about the man?
No, Randy, it's probably cemented my thought on that. Just the things I heard, you know, summertime is usually a time where coaches, they recharge their batteries. They get out of the office.
It's vacation time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to name the college, but I was talking to a Division I coach the other day, and I think they're off for 4 weeks. Okay. And
wow.
Their coach, you know, has got a place. He takes his family too. They get out and he basically tells everybody, hey, everybody get out of here for 4 weeks. Well, you know, Leipold, I've heard the stories. I've heard the staff was in 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. a lot during this summer. So that's what it takes at Kansas. You've got to have that mentality. You've got to work. You've got to be organized, which he is. He's got a great staff to do that. He's got a great support staff, the guys who are the non-on-the-field coaches. So, you know, he's put everything together. The thing that I like from what I hear about him, he has his thumb on everything that happens in the program. Whether this comes down to the graphic guy making edits for all of the recruits, to the meal plan that's going out that week, he likes to know everything that's going on in his program. And that's what you've got to do when you're at Kansas. You've got to be incredibly organized. You've got to be incredibly detailed. And just watching him around the camps, you know, listen, I've been to so many camps. I've looked around and said, where's the head coach? You know, where's the head coach at? Well, he might be in the office with ice water, sitting up, legs on the desk, watching ESPN while the camp's going on. But Leipold, man, he's out. He's been at every single one of those camps. He's out there front and center, watching everything. Everybody can see him. He's there. So I just think, Randy, from top to bottom, he is the type of guy that the Kansas program needed. And I said that from the beginning, but I knew people that knew him, okay? So I kind of had a little bit of a head start knowing what kind of coach he is. But he's got a great demeanor about him too, right? I mean, he's a worker. He's detailed. But he's got a real friendly disposition too. I think he's a very likable guy. So it's going to be very fun to watch this. I've just got a good feel about what he's doing here. Now, is that all going to show up this year? I have no idea. I mean, I wouldn't sit here and bet on KU in a lot of games. I did see a post on the message board that came back up about the Vegas number of wins was 1. I don't know if that's changed because it was an older post, but I put my money on that. I put my money on the over. I mean, you know, you got to think they'll come out ready to play against South Dakota in week 1, and then from there on out, you're kind of on house money looking for one more win. So, you know, I don't know if I'll judge this year on wins and losses, but I do think he is the right guy.
What do you think? You know, right now, without having seen this team on the field with this coaching staff, I mean, are you thinking 2 wins? Are you thinking 3? What are we looking at, John?
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, Randy, I've never been a big prediction guy, and I'm going to tell you something. Phil Steele, he when we were on, but before we went on the air, he said, John, how long you been doing this? I said, this is my 22nd year. And he joked and he said, man, you've been covering KU football for 22 years. And he's not the first one to say that, okay? Randy, we've watched a lot of down football in our time at
KU. Yes, we have.
Okay? So the one thing that I've learned, you cannot judge a coach in his first year on wins and losses. You can't do it. I remember watching Mark Mangino's teams, and I used to say, these guys are getting better. But they were getting their, you know, their butts kicked in, okay? And but you looked around and you went, man, the linebackers are in the right place. That guy was there to make the tackle. He's just young. He wasn't strong enough. That defensive end stayed home on this one play, or they had this one play set up. They just didn't execute it, but it was a great call. There were so many things in Mangino's first year. I mean, there were times, I think at Mangino's first year, I remember, I think K-State was shutting them out. And they pulled the first-string defense off the field. KU started moving the ball. They got into K-State's territory. Snyder put the first string back on the field to preserve the shutout. Okay? Yep. So, but there were things, though, okay, that if you watched, you went, God, these kids are playing hard. And, man, they're coached up. They were in the right call. And then once those kids got a little bigger and a little stronger, all of a sudden, you're going, he made that play this year. Last year, that guy didn't make that tackle. This year, he did. So I don't sit here and look at wins and losses and say, that's how I'm going to judge it. I want to see the competitiveness. I want to see what they're doing in terms of scheme and are players lined up and are they putting themselves in position to win? And you just say, wow, if they get a few better players here, they can do it. So that's kind of what I'm going to look at this year.
Is it really, and I've always, as somebody that's coached, you know, I have people ask me this, and I'm kind of curious your opinion too. Is this the kind of year where it's not so much what they do, it's more about how they do it?
Well, Randy, it depends, okay? It depends on who you are. If you're the casual fan who goes in, shows up, tailgates for an hour, goes in and just watches the game and looks at the score, okay, then you see different things. If you are like a lot of the people on our message board who are your hardcore football people, those guys and gals on the message board on our site, they're pretty dialed into football, okay? There's some people on that board, they can turn on the game and say, okay, KU just lost by 28, but we did some good stuff. And that's the thing that I don't think people understand. It's those parts where you say, God dang, those kids competed. Or, man, they really hit you. Or, I get it, we lost by 28, right? I mean, if you're a fan, you're like, hey, we got hammered. But you leave the field and go, God, those kids played hard and they delivered some blows. And, you know, there's a difference. And the people who know the football, they'll see it when they know it.
Alan, it's you've said a couple times, in your conversation with Phil Steele, where he was like, wow, you've covered KU for a long time. I haven't obviously been around the program in a media capacity nearly as long as you, but we have seen over the last, since I came on board with you back in 2014, we have not seen a lot of good things in Lawrence. And I think that after some of the programs in the administrations and the regimes that we've covered, I think, yeah, you recognize things. And I think you said it really well. Our message board, we have a lot of very savvy football fans, people that really understand what they're looking at. And I think they're the hardcore ones that are going to be there regardless. But if they can just see some things to start to give them hope, you know, tough physical play along the offensive line, being assignment sound in the secondary, picking up blitzes, you know, just doing the things that it takes to start to see some light at the end of the tunnel. I think people will be encouraged this year, and it wouldn't surprise me. It would not surprise me to see them in a couple games they shouldn't be in, just because of the ability of this coaching staff, and specifically the ability of the offensive line coach and Coach Fuchs, who is a tremendous teacher of the position and a man that has developed some very physical, technically sound groups. It would not surprise me at all to see them in some games late that get people's attention when they see the score running across the bottom of the screen.
Well, Randy, here's what you know, in a way, I think you're saying this too. It's also going to be what they do. When I say that is, okay, they're not going to be out in a hurry up offense all the time. Okay, they're not going to go out.
Which is a significant change.
It's a big change. Okay, you're going to see ball control. You're going to see an identity of trying to establish some power football. You are not going to see a hurry up offense. Like, hey, I don't know how many years we've seen this. Okay, and I'm not hammering any past coach or coordinator.
You're not knocking anybody. You're making a point though.
But when you're down 14-0, and you're out there running hurry up. And you go incomplete, and then you punt the ball away, your defense is back out on the field a minute later from when they left the field, okay? And they're getting worn down, and they're mentally going, man, I'm back out here again. I think one of the things when you say you think that Kansas could be in some games that they're not usually in or they weren't expected to be in, it will be because how they play the game, okay? Mm-hmm. They are going to play high-percentage football. They are going to try to limit mistakes. It's like a baseball coach who can, you know, move runners and bunt and then, you know, squeak one through the right side. Next thing you know, you score a run, okay? That's what I think you're going to see KU do. I think you're going to see them play high-percentage football, field position, use the clock, and then in games where you've looked up and watched Kansas down 31-7, now you're hoping they're down 24-10. Right? So that's what I think is going to be a stark contrast.
I absolutely agree. And that's, you just did a much better job of saying it better than I did. So I appreciate that. But that's what the most tenured member or the most tenured media member on the Kansas football beat. That's what people have grown to expect from a guy like a John Kirby.
Yeah, you're just saying I'm old. That's what you're saying.
Hey, I will say this. You were covering the team when I was still playing. That's all
I'm going
to say.
I remember that.
All right, man. Let's wrap this thing up. We've had some action in recruiting over the last 48 hours that we've talked about, summer camps going on. I mean, there's a lot happening on the recruiting trail, especially for, again, a coaching staff that has only been in town since May. Tell me, John, what stands out? What do people need to know about the latest commits to the Kansas Jayhawks?
Yeah, you know, a couple defensive backs that are really going to help out. Caleb Purdy committed today. He went public, a safety out of DeSmet. You know, Randy, I've heard through our network, people said, well, I think some coaches might question his height and they might, you know, question this or, hey, listen, the kid can flat out play football. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he had some offers. I mean, you know, Michigan offered him early. I mean, Iowa State offered him early. Missouri offered him early. There were some schools that liked him because of what they saw on film. I know we talk about Mangino and his staff a lot and what they did. This is the kind of guy Mangino would have taken. Mangino would have said, I don't care what his height is. This kid can play football. And when you're Kansas, you're still in a position where you've got to get kids who can play football and you can develop it. And that's what he is. And then Anthony Davis is a corner from Skyline. Again, when I talked to people in the network and some people that were familiar with him, their thought all along was it would be hard to get him out of Dallas. A lot of people thought he was going to go to SMU. But he told me, I wanted to feel at home. That's what Anthony Davis told me. Well, Emmett Jones and Chevis Jackson made him feel at home at KU. So that was big in him leaving because he felt, hey, that's like home away from home. So those were two big two big commitments that they got there. That I think that might wrap up the corners and the safeties for this upcoming class. There's not going to be a whole lot more high school spots left. So I think those will be closed. I went to the camps, got 250 kids at the over 250 kids at the last camp. And I'm telling you, it was organized. It was well run. Then there were some prospects there. Quentin Conley, just talked to him tonight, right before we got on the podcast.
Big tight end kid from here. Yes. In Kansas City at Pembroke.
Yeah, he told me he's going to play quarterback this year.
I had heard a rumor about that.
He told me he's going to play quarterback. I was like, really? And he said he played some quarterback in middle school. So he just got offered today. The Kansas staff offered him. He'll be somebody to watch. Did you talk to Jayshon Ross?
I did. Yeah. One of the really interesting names to pop up at that camp, the young defensive end from St. Pius. He's an exciting young player, a big defensive end kid. He's a 2024 kid that is already listed at 6'4", 220 pounds. Picked up an offer from Kansas after the camp earlier this week, and I was talking with him the other night, and he was really impressed with what he saw. And the way he said it was, I thought this was really interesting. He said, this is the quote, they're the real deal over there. And, he said that they have all the mechanics an athlete needs to be successful, that they need everything they need to hear and what it takes to be successful. And, he just was really excited, and it was, he's a young guy, obviously, and was just blowing up and was super excited about the offer and talked about how his parents may have actually been more excited than he was. He called him after he got the offer, and he said they were absolutely going crazy when he called him back in Kansas City. He's a kid that's going to be, I'm really looking forward to watching him this fall here in Kansas City. And another name, people talk about the defensive line, just across the river from where I'm sitting right now, big Dominique Orange at North Kansas City High School playing there for Leon Douglas. He it was interesting. I've got an article that'll be coming out on him pretty soon with his reactions. He went to camp. He didn't camp, but he was there and he wanted to hang around with the staff. And he said, he just talked about that they are all really cool coaches. And he emphasized, that he didn't have, he didn't have anything bad to say about the previous staff, but he said he feels like even though these guys are new on Coach Leipold's staff, he feels like he knows every one of them already. And he said, he can't put his finger on what changed, but he said it just feels like they're doing a better job recruiting. And I've told people, I really believe they're playing a long game with Dom. And I expect there to be there till the very end. And one of the biggest reasons why, he has a great relationship with Quan Drake. Really likes him. Said he's the coolest coach he's ever talked to because he understands what players want and how to help and talk to younger guys. And that's something that, it's one of those intangible things that you can't really put a price on. But ever since Quan Drake came on board under the last staff, I remember the first time I got to watch him up close in camps, and I know you've seen him too. He connects with guys in a way that is very different. And especially with those big defensive linemen, that's a different group. That's a whole different kind of position and mindset. And Coach Drake is one that he connects with those kids and he gets the most out of them. And I think that defensive line group, if they can add a kid like Dominique Orange, that's a 4-star defensive tackle that has offers from all over the country. Programs like Florida State, big time programs, are after Dom. And I expect Kansas to be there until the very end. And it would not surprise me at all to see the big man from North Kansas City end up in Lawrence.
Well, that would be big news. That's a guy that I don't think the fans early on would ever thought, hey, that's the position that they'll be in. Randy, I wanted to go back and touch on something you said. We were talking about Jayshon Ross, and you mm-hmm. were saying, he's a 2024 kid, right?
Yep.
And he's probably 6'4", 225.
Yes, okay? Sir.
Well, I stood right next to Melvin Laster from Liberty North. He's another.
That is a human, chiseled human being.
Listen, these are kids in the 2024 class. They just got done with their freshman years in high school, right?
They make you feel bad about yourself standing next to
them. These guys, Melvin Laster, he looks like he's 25 years old. He is every bit 6'2", 235, and I am telling you, he is cut up. Because he walked by, and he came back by, and I looked at his number. I said, is that Laster? No. I'm like, no. I go, Laster's a 2024 guy. I looked back at my notes, and I went, that's him. I'm like, that's him. And I go, wow. These guys for 2024 kids, I'm just telling you, when I was in high school, we did not see 2024 guys looking like that.
Melvin Laster's a kid, too, with the size that he's got and his athleticism. I mean, he's already, you know, 6'4", 230-plus pounds playing linebacker at Liberty North for Greg Jones and a team that is going to be very, very good and very physical this year. I fully expect him to, over the next couple years, I think he's going to grow into a defensive end, and he's going to be one of the top players in the entire country. That kid is a gifted, big, physical, twitched-up athlete, and he is going to be coached up, and, you know, it's a good thing that Kansas is in on him early, because it's going to end up being quite a chase to land a kid that already looks like that. I mean, that's a kid there that, you know, if you saw him walking around in the indoor practice facility in Lawrence, you might, like you say, you're not sure, is that a kid that's here for the camp, or is that one of the guys that's on the roster that's here to watch? Because he is put together, and he is the kind of kid that, you know, you start to get some of these local guys, and I know everybody kind of, we have some people on our board that are not big fans of local recruiting. They feel like you can take it or leave it. When you've got guys like a Melvin Laster, like a Dominique Orange right there in your backyard that you can literally build defenses around, cornerstone type players that play big time positions, you get those kind of guys, things change very quickly. And it's not just about the play on the field. It's about the perception of your program among coaches that are developing real players. I've talked about it on the board. North Kansas City, Leon Douglas, his staff for the Hornets, they have built that program in a way that they are developing high-quality defensive linemen on a yearly basis. And Edric Hill, who's going to, gosh, he's just a sophomore. I think he's another one of those 2023 kid that a long, rangy defensive player that they're already in on. And it's, again, it's about continuing to build relationships, because there's a freshman behind him that Coach Douglas has told me is maybe going to be better, even better than Tommy Itabawar, who's their big defensive lineman who's now a starter at Northwestern and maybe looking at playing on Sundays here pretty soon. That's how important these local relationships can be, because some of these guys start developing talent pretty consistently in places like North Kansas City, what they're doing on the defensive line and what Liberty North is doing. Greg Jones, these guys know how to get it done. They know how to develop players. And when they find talent like they've got, they get the most out of it. And working with programs like that, I can tell you, Quan Drake, he would not mind having a 6'4", 300-plus pound defensive tackle like Dominique Orange that he can pluck in the middle of that defensive line.
Hey, you were talking about relationships. I mean, there were 13, I think it was 13 kids made the trip from Michigan because Chris Simpson had a connection and knew some guys.
Yep, I heard about that.
And there were some good-looking players there. The big lineman Pruitt, I thought he was real good. Well, you know, they ended up offering him, but there was a corner, there was a receiver. I mean, there were some guys he got down there. So, like you said, it's about relationships locally and outside of it. So, yeah, it's the camps were good to cover. I saw Auding out of Topeka and Clements out of Free State. God, again, big frame kids who are going to be something down the road. But the camps were very well run, and it was last Wednesday, over 250 players at the camp, and I was just impressed just with the organization.
You mentioned Clements. I've got some quotes coming from him too. I got a chance to check in with him, with Jason Ross, with Dominique Orange. And I'll say this, everything that I've heard from those kids about that camp, they were all impressed with how it was run. I mean, you don't expect teenagers to comment on something like that, but a lot of these kids, you know, they camp a lot of places, and every one of them has said, they're like, that was really impressive the way it was done. We talk about impressive young guys, and we're talking about recruits. One of the latest commitments to the Kansas Jayhawks, Caleb Purdy, we're going to take a minute to bring him in. Kirby has talked with him. John, let's hear from the latest commitment to the Kansas Jayhawks and the newest addition to the KU secondary and Lance Leipold's program.
We are joined by the latest KU commitment, Caleb Purdy, a talented defensive back out of DeSmet High in St. Louis. Caleb, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
Yeah, man, big news. You just announced your commitment to the Jayhawks. Hey, tell me what led you to pick Kansas?
Oh, well, let me pick Kansas. I'm going to say Coach Leipold, really, man. He's a new coach at Kansas, and he's trying to change the culture and change it to a winning team. You know what I'm saying? That's big to me, you know what I'm saying? A coach that's trying to change the culture. And also Coach Spoonover, you know what I'm saying? I've been in contact with Coach Spoonover since February, you know what I'm saying? Since Coach Les Miles left, and you know what I'm saying? Coach Spoonover is like a big brother to me, you know what I'm saying? Contact me every other day, every other week, you know what I'm saying? And that's big because, you know what I'm saying, he really wants me at KU, you know what I'm saying? Now I finally made a decision with KU, man, and I think it's right now.
You know, that's one of the things I was going to ask you about, Coach Schoonover. I know he's been on you for a while. He's the one that recruited you the most. You know, just talk about the job he did and the relationship you built with him.
Yeah, like I said, he takes me every other day, you know what I'm saying? It was nonstop. He called me like every other day, you know what I'm saying? It was just like a thing where it's like, man, like he keeps calling me like nobody else. Really kept calling me on Schoonover besides the mother school, you know what I'm saying? So it felt special, felt real that, like, they really wanted me, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't fake love or anything. They really wanted me at KU, you know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, Coach Schoonover, even when I was on the visit, you know what I'm saying, he showed me a lot of love. You know, so him and Coach Peterson, they both showed me a lot of love because, of the, like, KU really wants me to keep. So that was definitely big.
When you went on your official visit, what were some of the things that stood out to you?
The thing that stood out to me, just seeing the coaches, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It was just COVID-related issues going on. But now, in that June period, it was good seeing the coaches and seeing the new coaching staff and they were showing me how they're going to change the program around with KU. And you know what I'm saying? Just being around the players, just seeing that the players really like being around each other, that family vibe, that brotherhood. So that's what really stood out to me, that the players really stick around each other, even off the field, more than on the field. So that was definitely great about KU.
Okay, so I've watched your film. It's really good film. I'm curious, what did the staff tell you they liked about your film?
What they liked about me, they said that I'm a lot versatile. You know, I'm 5'10", you know what I'm saying? I'm supposed to be, quote, like a smaller player, but it shows that I have heart, you know what I'm saying? I play with teammates. I'm a great leader on the field, you know what I'm saying? And I'm one of those players who really loves the game of football, you know what I'm saying? That's what Coach Bolin really loved about me, you know what I'm saying? We was in his room for about 25, 30 minutes watching film on me and players that was at KU. So that was definitely great, just how they watched my film day in, day out, and I was a top priority for them. So it was definitely great.
You know, when you committed – just tell me, what was the staff's reaction?
Yeah, so I texted Coach Schoonover, what was that, Monday, and told him I would like to get on the phone. Then he handed the phone to Coach Lightfoot when I called, and I told Coach Lightfoot I'm ready to commit. And so Coach Lightfoot, he was super excited. And then next thing you know, I hear Coach Schoonover, you know what I'm saying, he in the background, super excited. And then next thing you know, they was having a barbecue before the players left. You know what I'm saying? Before the players went on break. And so Coach Peterson, Coach Bolin was super excited. You know what I'm saying? I could hear it in their voices. And they told the players, they said I made a lot of noise at the facilities that day. So it was definitely special to them. And it was special to me, too.
You know, Caleb, I know coming up, you want to, you know, your high school season's coming up. And it's probably nice to have a decision made. Just tell me what it feels like to be a Jayhawk, getting ready to start your season, and kind of have this out of the way.
Man, it's just, it feels good, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of pressure just off my neck now where I can just go in the season and go worry about playing ball. You know what I'm saying? I don't have to worry about, you know what I'm saying, what college I'm going to go to or who's still recruiting me. I got a home now with Kansas, you know what I'm saying? That's very special, you know what I'm saying? Now I can just, August going to come over now. It's just time to play ball, high school ball, finish his last year of high school and go win that state championship. So that's definitely great.
Caleb, man, I really appreciate you coming on. Congratulations on your commitment, and thanks for joining us on the podcast. And I definitely look forward to talking to you in the future.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That's Caleb Purdy from DeSmet High School in Missouri, the latest commitment to the Jayhawks, another one that Kansas fans can feel excited about. John, we are almost there. Fall camp is coming up. Are you excited? Are you ready for it like I am?
Man, I am. I'm ready to see what this, you know, happens. And, you know, Randy, and I say this, and I don't want to take any shine off fall camp, but, you know, fall camp is fall camp, okay? You're going to get guys saying, hey, we're getting after it, we're doing this, it's a positive feel. It's like preseason in baseball, right? I mean, every True. Year, you know, you and I, hey, this is going to be a year. Royals are going to do something, right? I mean, you know,
and
every
here
year.
Here we are trading pieces at the
Right,
deadline.
Right. But so fall camp's going to be fall camp, you know. We'll have a little bit of basic limited access to probably watch the basic parts of practice have you seen of the beginning where it's scripted, and we'll get a chance to talk to some guys and bring some nice articles. But I'm ready for the season, okay? And the season is what's going to tell me. It's not going to be, you know, what you get in fall camp and the feature stories that you write. So I'm looking forward to the season. That's what I'm really looking forward to, and I'm ready for it.
We talk about fall camp as a final reminder. Let's remember, people. February. Exactly, let's see, 5 months ago, it was yesterday's high temperature. It was exactly 100 degrees hotter than what it was on February 15th when we were all complaining about how cold it was around here. Just something to think about as we gear up for fall camp. The fact that it's almost here. It's almost football season. We have survived. We've made it through this long, and you've survived maybe one of our longest podcasts that we have ever put together here on the Inside Slant. Let's wrap this thing up. You've been listening to another edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. For John Kirby, I'm Randy Withers. We will talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.